Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. With over 200,000 locations throughout the U.S. and offering 12,000 different types of batteries, stop into your local Interstate Battery store today and let them help you find the right batteries for your everyday life.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. Welcome to the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. We are continuing on our Montana tour. This is the Montana tour, but Colby and I are still on our way back from our hunt in Montana.
Yep.
And
with old Izzy and Smoke.
Izzy and Smoke, yep. We're actually at Bass Pro in Denver right now. And this is going to be an awesome podcast because I have my friend Brian Strickland as our he's going to be talking to us today. Brian and I have a pretty good history together, not like long term, like we've been friends since we were kids, but we have
it's probably been five or six years ago
say
at least. Yeah,
we met at the Archery Trade Association show, and I'm going to give a little introduction. Well, first of all, let me say we're going to talk to Brian about what he does, but we're going to also primarily talk about a hunt that Brian just went on. Brian killed we've got to see what it scores when it dries, but he killed a Boone and Crockett bear with his trad bow last week. What day was it, Brian?
It was this past Friday, so that would have been, what, the 4th?
May 4th. So, yeah, so Brian has still got the smell of bear on his hands. He killed a monster bear.
May 3rd
up in Manitoba. So that's where we're going. We're going to kind of introduce Brian Strickland. Those who wouldn't know him, and Brian's a heck of a hunter, a good friend of mine. But so we'll just start there. Brian, you're primarily an outdoor writer. If we're talking vocationally inside the outdoor industry, Brian's a prolific outdoor writer, had hundreds of articles published in probably almost every national outdoor magazine that's not like a gun magazine.
Right. It'd be mainly bow hunting specific type stuff. So, Bow Hunting World, Archery Business, Inside Archery, Bow Hunter, Bow and Arrow,
Peterson's
Hunting, when it was around. I never had anything in Peterson's Bow Hunting. Okay. I've done some online stuff for them, but nothing
in Outdoor Life.
Print. Never in Outdoor Life. I did some stuff for Field and Stream.
That's what it was, Field and Stream. Yeah.
So, and then some websites, Realtree.com just other places, but just kind of any Rocky Mountain Game and Fish,
about 15 years.
Probably my first one was published in 2001, I think, in Bow Hunter. So that would have been the very first one I ever had published.
Okay. So 18 years.
Yeah,
and
a chunk.
Brian has a column every month in Bow Hunting World.
Bow Hunting World, I have a column in there right now, and then, of course, the illustrious Bear Hunting Magazine.
Bear Hunting Magazine. Yep, Brian writes a Western bear hunting column in Bear Hunting Magazine, and have for at least 2 years, maybe three. Okay.
So.
Well, so if you are at all paying attention to kind of some of the mainstream bow hunting magazines, you would recognize Brian's name. And Brian is also... just last year you had two episodes of Bear Horizon, which Bear Horizon is our basically the videos we put up on YouTube. We make a DVD.
Right.
Brian killed a bear in Quebec with his trad bow last year and killed a bear in Saskatchewan with the trad bow last year. Filmed them both. We made some cool little videos. They weren't real long. One of them was
Pretty short because little technical issues there, but the other one, the Quebec one, was really good, well done, I thought, and I think it's more on the production side than my side. So,
well, we had to clean up a few things, Brian.
Hey, that sounds like the story of my life.
But Brian, your history in hunting, I mean, we talk to these guys that are doing stuff in the outdoor industry for a career, but... I mean, you're a bow hunter,
right?
And you're You live in Colorado. Why don't you introduce yourself and kind of your hunting? And
yeah, I've been hunting off and on my whole life. I mean, grew up bird hunting in Kansas and Texas and things like that. And then when I moved to Colorado in 92, I went on my first real deer hunt at that time. And it was a mule deer hunt out west around Pagosa Springs. And when I was there, it was a rifle hunt. I saw this orange out there. And I ended up killing a decent little 4x4 muley buck. But every place I went, I would just look on a hillside. There'd be a blaze orange vest there, a blaze orange vest over there. Just couldn't get away from the people. And the following year, I decided, I'm going to start bow hunting because I know I won't see the people. Mm. And that's just kind of where I picked it up. I think I first picked up a bow in 99 would be the first year. Yeah. I probably did that.
So you've been in your late 20s?
Late 20s, exactly. Yep. Yeah, I wish I'd have picked it up earlier.
Yeah,
so
well,
I'm kind of a latecomer to the bow hunting thing. 20, I think it was probably 29 or so, 28. Yeah. But just haven't looked back since. I mean, I killed a cow elk that first year and went on a mountain lion hunt and killed a mountain lion, and then also killed a first real whitetail hunt I've ever been on. I killed 166-inch.
Really? Colorado?
In Kansas. So, and that was a story I wrote about in Bow Hunter.
You know, I got my start in outdoor riding in Bow Hunter.
Yeah.
Writing about the Arkansas deer I killed.
I remember I was, back then, you know, nothing was email. It was all hard copy. You sent it in with the photos and I even think, you know, as I progressed in the outdoor
Dwight
writing.
Dwight Shue would have been the editor?
As Dwight Shue, yep. And as I progressed in the outdoor, you know, writing side of things, you started using more slides as you've gotten doing more and more of it. But I didn't know that back then. I was just using print photos, sent them in. And all of a sudden, you know, a few weeks later, there was a contract in the mail with a check. I thought,
you were pumped, weren't you?
And I'm thinking, man, this is pretty easy. Yeah. First one and done.
Yeah.
And so I just picked up from there and just met some people. You know, Lynn Burkhead's a real good friend of mine. You've met him. And he's been writing for a long time, and he's extremely good at it and written for every publication you can think of, and both gun and bow and fishing, and he just kind of took me under his wing, and really I just fed off of him. And you know, what do I need to do? What, you know, we went on a hunt together, is where I met him, and this kind of has just gone from there.
Yeah. So how many articles a year do you think you publish now?
Now I've probably slowed down a little bit now from what it was, but probably when I was really hitting it hard, I would say 50 to 60 a year.
Wow.
And that would be both, you know, print magazines as well as online, especially as online came about in the last, probably 5 years ago, when it really started hitting it hard. I would do quite a bit of stuff online just because it was quick and easy.
Brian, what is the favorite animal that you've ever taken with a bow? I mean, like, I'm talking a specific hunt, specific animal.
It would be a mule deer hunt in Colorado, which is just an excellent hunt. Just everything just kind of worked out great in that hunt. It was like God was looking down and, you know, just ordered this deer to come right to me. And it wasn't a giant deer. He probably scored 140-inch Pope and Young deer, but he was really tall. He's only a 3x4. But just how the hunt all played out, that was probably my favorite.
What year was that?
That would have been probably 7 or 8 years ago, I would imagine.
Yeah. Now, you're kind of known for your mule deer hunting.
I like mule deer. It's kind of my favorite.
And you're positioned for mule deer.
Yeah, it's just because I'm here in Colorado. They're fairly easy to hunt, although it is harder to get tags now than it was. But mule deer is probably at the top of my list. And I tell people all the time, I really hate hunting elk. And they just kind of look at me like I'm crazy.
I'm glad you said that.
That's what everybody
wants
to hunt.
I hate elk, too.
Yeah, there you go.
I've never done it.
There you go. But, you know, people look at me funny when I say that because they just think, how can you not like hunting elk? And it's not that I really hate hunting elk. I just prefer mule deer.
Right.
And I'm just not a real good hunter, so it takes me most of the season to do it. So.
Right. Well, but we really know that your favorite animal is the black bear.
I like bear hunting too. I'm kind of a late comer.
Well, and that's where we're ultimately going with all this is that the last several years you've really enjoyed some spring bear hunting.
Yeah,
and this is the cool thing to me about bear hunting is that to be a bear hunter doesn't mean that that's all you do, and it's not taking over your life.
Right.
But you've added this piece into your hunting repertoire
right.
of you hunt bear in the spring, and you've hunted them hard. I mean, yeah. you're going on 3 spring bear hunts this year.
I'm going on 3 this
you
year.
You went on 2 or 3 last year.
I went on 2.
Just 2, well, Quebec and Saskatchewan.
I went to Idaho last year and didn't connect.
So you went on 3 last year.
I went on 3 last year. So, yeah, it's kind of gets in your blood, I think. Even the baited hunts. I know some people have a little controversy with the baited
black bear
hunts.
Those people don't listen to this podcast.
Yeah,
we kick them off.
So you should. But, I mean, it's a challenging aspect of bear hunting. And, I mean, I've spot and stalked them in British Columbia a couple times as well, and that's great. But bears just kind of have gotten under my skin probably the last 3 to 5 years, I would say. And it's just kind of the setting that they live in. And they're just not easy to hunt. I mean, they don't run in herds. I mean, you see one or two.
They're low-density animals.
Low-density animals. They spread out. And you can, you know, shoot a small one. But if you hold out, you can really shoot a really nice one. It's just a fun way to hunt.
Yeah.
And I think they're the perfect big game animal to hunt with traditional bow.
Well, and that's a great movement right there is that – so you, most of your bow hunting career, you've been using a compound bow.
Yeah.
And in the last 3 years?
3 years, I probably picked it up and really started hunting hard with the trad bow the last 2 years.
Talk to me about the transition from compound to trad, why you did it.
Yeah, it was, I used a trad bow, about 7 or 8 years ago for a short period of time. And I just missed game. I mean, I wounded a deer. Missed a couple bears in British Columbia that year, actually. And I I put it back down. I went back to my compound.
Kind of scared you.
It did, because I really still enjoy the killing aspect of the hunt. I mean, which, you know, may not be PC, but at the end of the day, that's
right.
That's what we do. And, but now as I've gotten older now, I'm touching 50 and, killing isn't as important to me as the whole experience of the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And not that with a traditional bow you can't obviously be successful. You can be very successful with it, and I know a lot of people that are extremely successful with it. So I picked it back up a couple years ago and really haven't picked up the compound much. I did when I was out at Arizona this past year on a mule deer hunt. In January, I used the compound just because you're forced to take 60, 70-yard shots out there, even longer. But I had my trad bow in the car with me just in case I had that opportunity.
Well, it counts for something.
Yeah, it was there. I was thinking about it. But the transition,
about her.
Yeah, the transition is gone good. I mean, it's like anything else. It's about practice. Whether you're shooting a rifle or shooting a compound bow or a traditional bow, it's about practicing and shooting a lot, and more so, I think, with the traditional bow. And if you're willing to pick it up and really shoot it and practice and just learn how to shoot, learn proper form, and just kind of pick your style, I think you can be successful and shoot.
Yeah.
Really, you know, I can accurately shoot out to 40 yards and feel pretty comfortable with it. So, you know, just kind of practice a lot and hit it,
yeah.
and I've enjoyed doing it. So it's been a lot of fun.
And you know, we've talked before, and I think we had a similar experience in that we were compound archers, and haven't totally put the compound down. I still shoot my compound some. But there comes a point when you're looking for the archery segment of the hunt to be more of a challenge. Like, constantly inside of hunting, we're trying to find the place that we want
right.
to have self-imposed limitation. We're looking for that place. Where is the limitation on this hunt that's going to make it really satisfactory and be the kind of hunt that I want? And a lot of times with a compound bow, and I've heard you say this, I mean, it was kind of like, I can go out and kill a mule deer with a compound bow.
Right.
I mean, it's not, yeah, it's a challenge. Yeah, it's tough, but I know I can do that. I've done it so many times.
Right.
Where it's like, I need a new challenge.
Right. You put your self-imposed challenge. I mean, for some guys with a compound, their challenge is, okay, I want to kill a 180-inch mule deer. That's a challenge because, first of all, there's not very many of them out there. And secondly, I mean, you got to get close to them. Even with a compound, yeah, you can shoot out the 50, 60 yards. But a lot of times out west here in the Rockies, I mean, those kind of shots aren't available because of cover or what have you. And so you just kind of self-impose new challenges on you. And what I've self-imposed on me is the tradition of bow and getting close. And I've missed some deer. I mean, I missed a 190-inch mule deer last year. You know, the arrow went right over
his
back.
That takes some guts to do that, though, Brian. I bet some people just flinched when you said that.
Because, I mean, if I'd had a...
Did you flinch, Colby?
I did.
Man, Colby, I got it. Every time I've been doing this, I've been skipping right. Colby Moorhead, Bearhunting Magazine Bear Tech is here. I flinched when you said that, Brian. Missed a 190-inch mule deer.
I'm going on my first mule deer hunt potentially this fall.
Don't miss with a trad bow.
Yeah, I think I'm taking a rifle this time.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I think I'm gonna husk him out. I mean, best of the west it.
Yep, that's right.
But, you know, and it was, if I'd had a compound, it was a 40-yard shot, a little bit less, might have made it, been a slam dunk. He was just standing there unaware.
Would that have been the biggest mule deer you ever killed?
Pretty close.
Killed some big ones, though.
I killed a few really nice ones in the 180s and maybe touching 190s. I don't ever get them scored because that's just not all that important, but they're big. But this one was just a non-typical, had points going everywhere, just a handsome deer, and... but I know where he's at. He'll be there next year if nobody killed him.
Or you're going to take me in there.
What? You didn't apply.
I did.
Did you apply this year?
Well, I've got points, I think.
Right. But did you apply?
Well, not for this year.
Oh, okay. Did you apply for a point this year?
Well, we got to talk about that. Yeah. I'm not sure if I did or not. Is it done?
I think it's done. Yeah, it's done this year. So, but we can still get a tag, possibly. But
well, I've got two preference points.
Yeah, so you should be able to draw this particular area pretty close now.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that. But so you picked up traditional archery, and you've killed multiple bears with it.
I've killed, three bears now, two whitetails, and some pigs.
Yeah.
Some hogs in Texas.
Yeah.
So, which in a couple years, that's pretty good. I mean, I've... you know, if I think back, the only hunts I've really zeroed on were that mule deer hunt from last year and elk hunt from last year. And then I passed up elk. I just didn't shoot them. And then the mule deer, it just, wasn't meant to be. That's pretty good success. And
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's one thing that we've connected on is the transition to traditional archery.
Yeah.
And I think that's a concept that, or it's a thing that people really struggle with, because you're shooting a compound bow, which is already a limitation from a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, hey, let's take it a whole nother massive notch down by going to traditional archery.
Right.
And, it's tough to kill animals with a trad bow, but man, the satisfaction of it, the whole process is pretty incredible.
It is. I mean, when you with these bows now, these compound bows are shooting 300 plus feet per second. I mean, you can still see them, the arrow go, and with lighted nocks and everything. But when you're shooting a bow that's shooting 200 feet per second, and seeing the arrow and seeing it arc and seeing it hit your target, there's just kind of something special. And to know that you got, you know, and most generally you're trying to get as close as you can to an animal. So, you know, you're trying to get 10, 20 yards at least.
What would you say to somebody that was considering making that transition? Like, what advice would you give them?
Shoot a lot. Shoot every day and learn good form. I would say...
Where did you learn good form?
You know, I go down to Rocky Mountain Specialty Gear and talk with those guys here in Colorado. Clum. I've talked with him a little bit, but just anybody there will help you. And there's always all these online resources now that really help you.
Now, when you shoot three fingers under.
Three under.
Uh-huh. You hold your anchor.
I hold my anchor. I'm not a snap shooter. I would say I gap more than anything else. And for people don't know that, you're basically using the tip of your arrow. That's similar to a sight pin on a bow, and you're just learning, you know, at what distance, you know, where you want the arrow to hit at 20 yards where that point needs to be. And then there's a point on spot, so at point on distance, so when your arrow tip is, say, 40 yards, and that's your point on. So if you have your arrow tip at your object at 40 yards, that's where it's going to hit because that's the point
on. Even to describe it a layer deeper, at full draw, from your sight window looking down the arrow, you use the tip of that arrow.
I use the tip of the arrow to help.
As an aiming point,
As an aiming point. And that improved my accuracy tremendously.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine. People are shooting instinctively, and I'm sure you can be extremely effective at that. But I think traditional, I think traditional bow hunters that do that kind of limit themselves because they're shooting to 20 yards and that's, they're kind of stuck. They'll say they can shoot out to 30, but, you know, arrows.
That's me, Brian. You're talking about me.
Yeah, you know. Arrows start to separate and accuracy diminishes, but when you can really use your tip of your arrow, I think it just really helps with accuracy overall.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's what we want to be. We want to be accurate. We want to kill the animal humanely and recover it, and that's part of it. So,
yeah. Well, so you just got back from a hunt with Todd Wolgamuth, Baldy Mountain Outfitters in Manitoba.
Duck Mountains in Manitoba.
So
my new favorite place.
I know this area pretty well because I've hunted whitetails there
with
Tom Ainsworth, who is a former bear hunting outfitter. Now Todd Wolgamuth has taken over that area. Todd Wolgamuth is a friend of mine. I've dealt with Todd for 2 years now, I guess, in the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And Baldy Mountain Outfitters is now hunting the area that was Grandview Outfitters. That's irrelevant, but it is relevant because that's an incredible area.
It is. You know, I hunted the Duck Mountains of Saskatchewan last year, which is just the other side of the border, and it was more the kind of the foothills right on the edge of farm country. A lot of bears there as well, so I had a little familiarity with the Duck Mountains, but Todd's place is really in the mountains. We're hunting right off of Baldy Mountain, which is the highest point in Manitoba, and hence the name Baldy Mountain Outfitters. But it was a great place to hunt. I mean, I saw, which doesn't sound like a lot, but I saw 15 bears in 5 days. And you would think if you're going to Canada, you're going to see more bears. But keep in mind, this was the first week of the season. There was still snow on the ground. It snowed on me twice while I was there. And it was just cold. It wasn't ideal bear hunting weather. The weather hadn't stabilized like it does later in the spring, and the bears get more active. So we had some things against us on that hunt.
Let's stop right there.
Okay.
So the transition of the spring, this is something I learned when I started bear hunting, which nobody ever taught me or I never read about it. But, like, basically you spring bear hunt in May and June for the most part.
Right.
I mean, in the West, and even in Canada, some of the seasons open April 15th, but typically – outfitters don't start taking hunters until the first week of May. That is early.
That's early.
Just like you said, you might be hunting in snow.
Right.
But by that time, especially the boars are going to be out.
Yep.
They are going to be hitting baits. They are going to be moving.
And right.
We just came back from Montana hunting the same time as you, further south than you, further west than you. But we were seeing bears, but it's the same thing. They're in this transition of going from denning to feeding heavily and then moving into the rut.
Right.
So what you're hunting when you're hunting that early season is you're hunting these boars on 100% feeding pattern.
Right.
I mean, basically the bear rut, you're going to start seeing bear rut activity around the 20th of May,
right,
give or take, all the way through June and into the July, but nobody's hunting bears in July. So that's the beauty of an early season hunt, is that if you do have a big boar coming into a bait, if you do have a big boar coming into a meadow, he's probably not going to go very far. Where in the rut, he could go wherever.
And also, with early in the year, food sources tend to be a little more limited than out west where you
natural
guys are
food
at.
Is limited.
Yeah, natural food is limited. I mean, green up's kind of just starting. And so there's limited, you know, exposure for grass to grow on those south-facing slopes.
And they've got to eat. They've come out of the den, and they're about to go into the rut.
Right.
And they've got to pound the feed.
They're hungry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and same thing up there. I mean, once a bear finds the bait, which I think Todd has 30-plus baits set up, and they're full. I mean, he's got 4 or 5 barrels on each bait, and they're just getting pounded because once the bears find them, you'll get a boar that will just camp out on that bait and get 2 or 3 that will just camp out on it, and they just feed on it because that's really up there. It's all they have right now.
Yeah.
They don't have any grasses to feed on. And
no green up at all?
There's no green up at all right now. I mean, they're starting to see a little bit on the edge of the roads. I mean, as I was leaving, I would see more and more whitetails feeding on the edge of the roads where I didn't see that the first couple of days.
Mm.
So just in those few days, it started to green up. But so food's a... you know, an important resource, and it's limited that time of year, so they really hit the baits pretty hard. So that's kind of the benefits of hunting that early season like I did. You don't see as many bears because potentially you have, you know, new mothers with young cubs that are kind of hiding out. They're not coming around to the baits. And the bears maybe are a little bit more spread out now.
Yeah. They're just not as active, too.
They're not as active.
You know, by later in May and into June, I mean, bears would be like 100% active.
Right.
This time of year, if a cold snap comes, a bear might go back to his den or maybe not even to his den, but he might
just lays up.
He might bed up for 12, 14, 15, 16 hours a day and just feed for little sections.
Right.
So it's just like they're just not as active.
Right. And I think that's what happened on that hunt. I was fortunate. I mean, I probably saw more bears than anyone, and it was just really the luck of the draw because I was even hunting behind other people. A couple of the stands I hunted, two of the other hunters had already hunted.
Did they see a bear that you wanted to kill?
No, they didn't see any bears at all, but when I go in there, I'd see three or four.
Okay.
So it was just luck. I mean, it was just however, you know, it just worked out that way.
Yeah.
So overall, it was a good hunt. I saw a lot of bears, but it was a slow hunt that, you know, the first bear didn't get killed until the second day. And then there was one killed the third day and a wound, and then mine and another one on the last day.
Yeah.
So we went, you know, really 5 for 6.
And I think that's
a good hunt.
Really typical. That's really typical for that time, and I've had a lot of Canadian bear outfitters tell me that they prefer that first week.
Yeah,
it's a little bit risky.
It is, yeah,
because it's possible you could have gone up there and really got into like legit snow.
Right.
Unlikely, but possible.
And I could tell Todd was a little worried. I mean, there was still snow on the ground.
So really,
I could tell Todd was worried. You know, because the first day out, really no bears were seen other than a couple that I'd seen, and so you know it was outfitters they want to make their clients happy, and Todd's just like anyone else. He wants to do that. But, you know, as the week progressed, the weather still was pretty lousy most of the week and just kind of colder weather. But you just stick with it, and eventually, you know, something will happen, and that's what happened.
So where did you stay up there?
We stayed in these little cabins on a lake, on Blue Lake. So they're little two-bedroom cabins.
Comfortable,
yep. I mean, it's good overall from a bear camp perspective. It was a good camp. Food was really good, and accommodations were, you know, bear camp accommodations.
How far were you driving to the baits from where you were hunting?
Anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes, and some baits are spread out maybe 45 minutes away to an hour.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a big area, and when you have 30-plus baits and you're moving people around, what he would like to do is, you know, put all five hunters in the same general area just from a transportation standpoint. I mean, he had two other guides with him. So, and then once, if we hunted that area one day, then we maybe move 10, 15 miles and hunt another area.
Okay.
And everybody was spread out. There wasn't any issues of like that. Just from a transportation standpoint.
In a good outfitter like Todd, too, is going to have his baits spread out so same bears aren't. I mean, you know, this is. There are definitely places where an outfitter could spread out bear baits every half a mile down the road.
Right.
And, I mean, you're fooling yourself to think that it's not the same bears hitting it.
Right.
You get into these good outfitters.
Right.
I mean, like world-class outfitters.
Right.
You're not going to find that.
No.
They're spreading baits out. I think one of the outfitters told me that he liked to have 3 to 5 miles between baits.
Right. And I would say these were in that 3 mile range for sure.
Yeah, and you certainly could get bears that are traveling that far,
right?
But unlikely.
Yeah, they went even further than that. I mean, he would get. I mean, some of the rides on the ATV would be 30 to 45 minutes in
after you parked the truck.
After you parked the truck.
Wow.
So it was, and there were some rough rides.
Yeah.
It was a. You know, I won't say because you're on an ATV, it's not a wilderness-type hunt, but there's still an aspect of wildness to it
because
it's remote. I mean, you don't have cell service. You're out there really in the middle of nowhere, and you're back in there miles.
Yeah. Well, I know that area because Bernie Barringer has hunted up there a lot.
Yeah.
Bernie's killed a 500-pound bear there.
Right.
He's killed multiple he's for sure killed one big color face bear. I don't think it weighed 500, but, 350 to 400.
Right.
He's killed I want to say several. I don't know if that's accurate. He's killed a Boone and Crockett bear there, maybe two.
Right.
I mean, like, it's an incredible area.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Todd put him on a blind bear that it didn't work out 2 years ago, but they had a blind, but Bernie was after right. specifically a blind bear.
Yep, there is a lot of color phase up there. I didn't personally see any, but saw trail camera pictures of it, and other hunters in camp saw some color as well. One of them saw a blonde, as well as you know, the chocolate browns, and
yeah.
and then one of the hunters in camp made a bad shot on one and didn't recover, and it was a big brown as well. So,
and for everybody that's listening, they may understand the color phase world, and we talk about it pretty regularly, but I think it's good to repeat. One of the really unique features of northern bears is the is that they're different color phase.
Yeah.
Blonde, cinnamon, black, and kind of chocolate.
Chocolatey, yep.
Yeah.
And you can even get some red color.
Yeah, and know. That would be like a cinnamon, I right. would say, kind yeah. of reddish brown mm-hmm. to yeah. brown, black, and blonde.
Right.
And different parts of Canada are going to be known for colored bears, but really any the eastern provinces pretty much don't have, for all practical purposes, don't have color phase bears.
Right.
From about Ontario all the way to the east.
Right.
And from, you know, there are color phase bears in Ontario, but from, let's just say, Western Ontario all the way west,
right.
you're going to have color phase. Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta would probably be the primary Canadian provinces that are going to have the most color right. phase bears.
Yeah, BC seems to have a lot of black. I don't know if there's a lot of color.
Not
in
as
BC.
Much, but they do
but
have
I've seen
some
them.
Color.
Yeah, I missed one
but,
there. So
I yeah, know. You know they're there. Yeah. They're still there.
Missed three times that
they're
day.
Still, yeah. There's one there. No, in color phase, there's usually not over, even in the highest densities of color phase bears, really
right.
not over 20% of the population is going to be color phase.
Right.
Even though people, outfitters, will say, you know, that they killed 50% color phase the last year. Some people can get that confused. And they go to an outfit, and they think they're going to see half of the bears are color phase,
right.
half of them are black.
Right.
That's not the case.
No, because there's
and
people.
And the outfitter's not being dishonest either.
Right.
Just their harvest was 50%.
Exactly. Those hunters are going up there to look for a color phase bear.
Right.
And if you can, if you're a hunter that wants to do that, and you can go to a place and hold out and have a 50% chance of getting one, that's pretty good odds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, western United States, I think, is where you get vast majority of your color phase.
Like in Colorado, there's like
Colorado, Utah, Idaho, you know,
Montana.
Yeah, I mean, it's just why, I don't know. I'm sure there's some scientific explanation for it. I don't know it, but
yeah. It has to do. There's correlations between canopy cover and rainfall.
Right.
Basically, where there's openness, they find open terrain,
right.
they find more color phase. But
adapting to their environment.
Yeah, I mean. But you look at Canada, which is like almost 100% forested, and you get color phase.
Right.
So it's not, there's not a 100% reason, but I think that's important to talk about. But so you on this early season hunt, you're using the trad bow.
Using a Bear Kodiak.
And what did the publisher of Bear Hunting Magazine tell you before you went on this trip?
Don't shoot a small bear.
Why did he tell you that?
Because I have a tendency to shoot small bears.
Hey, Brian is 6 foot six.
Yeah.
Okay? Brian is 6 foot six. He has got to have a big bear in front of him for it to look big.
Yeah.
Okay?
I just met him, but I really look up to him already.
Aha, pun. There's our pun. Guys like me and Colby that are just, you know, kind of just normal. We can kill just average animals and they
and look okay.
They look okay,
right?
But no,
my bear look like a grizzly next to me.
Yeah,
just kidding.
So walk us through the week and kind of what happened on the hunt.
I mean, every day I saw bears except the fourth day, and it was just one of those. It rained, and it was just a nasty day to hunt, but you just stick with it, and because you just never know. I mean, bears will show up in the rain.
Yep.
And you just stick with it, and you know that every bait you sit at there has a potential of producing a Boone and Crockett bear. And I haven't done the numbers on this, but I'm going to do some research, but I would imagine – That's the Duck Mountains are the top spot in Manitoba for producing Booner bears.
Maybe. I'm not sure.
And the pictures that I've seen, and just the evidence, I know there's big bears, big tracks. And so it's just a matter of waiting, and that's what I did. I mean, the first day it was hard for me because I'm good with a 150-pound bear. I mean, that's,
that you could throw over your shoulder and
I
walk,
walk
right
out
to
in
camp.
The woods, right? Exactly,
like a coon, right? Like, be like me throwing a coon over my shoulder.
But I really was wanting to hold out for a bigger bear this year because prior to this, the biggest bear I'd killed was probably a 250-pound one in Idaho, which is a really, really nice bear for Idaho.
For the West, for sure.
Yeah, and it's a gray-faced black bear, and it was just a good experience and a really big bear. So, but I really wanted to hold out for something big just because I haven't really had an experience with big bears, but now that I have, I don't know if I'll shoot a 100-pound one again. Unless I'm maybe someplace else, I don't know.
Yeah.
But overall, it was a good experience as far as sightings of bears. Even the smaller bears were still good quality bears. When I say 150 to 200 pounds, and a lot of boars. I mean, you could tell most of the bears you were seeing were boars. I did see one sow with the four cubs.
Four cubs.
Oh, wow. Which you really don't see. And she was big. I didn't realize it was a sow at first because I was hunting and I looked over to my right and I saw some bears walking through the brush about 80 yards away. They looked pretty small. And all of a sudden they shot up a tree. And I saw three of them shoot up a tree. And so I knew there was a sow around, but I just thought maybe she shot them up because there was a boar around. Right. And all of a sudden, I look up over towards the bait, and there was a bear walking in, and it would look like a really big bear. And it was a big bear. And I was going to shoot him because it was getting down to the fourth afternoon of the hunt, and it was a good bear. But I thought, yeah, I'm just going to wait to see what happens. And sure enough, the four cubs came out about 2 minutes later, and that was mama.
Yeah.
And it was a big sow.
That's a good lesson right there to just...
Just wait.
Wait. And usually you have that time.
You do.
You got time to make sure that it's an animal that doesn't have cubs.
And those cubs would have survived. They were over a year old. But still, in Manitoba, you can't shoot family groups.
Yeah, sure.
So, but that was a good experience, too, just seeing that you have a sow with four cubs. I mean, you just really don't see that very often at all.
That's a good sign.
As far as the hunt that... The afternoon that I killed the big bear, you want to go into that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that was one of those spots. I think it was called Elmer. You know, they all have little nicknames for all these baits. I don't know where the nicknames derive from, but I'm sure it was some interesting experience.
Probably a guy from Arkansas that killed the world record there.
Yeah, very well could have.
Elmer. He's in the Boone and Crockett record books.
Yeah.
Last name Fudd.
So
Elmer Fudd.
But, I had one bear come in as soon as I got there around 4:30, and it was a smaller, you could tell it was a boar, just a smaller boar, and he fed around.
Were you thinking, I want to shoot that bear? This
no,
is day five.
Even the last day.
You were just going to go home without a bear.
I was going to go home without a bear. I mean, if a decent bear came in, then I would have shot. When I say decent, up there, something in the 200-pound range. Because up to this point, there had been two bears killed, and both of them are right at that 200-pound range.
Okay.
Which is, you know, they were 250. Time they
spring bear 250 pounds. That's pretty.
That's
good.
A nice bear, and they had big heads on them. Both of them were over 19 inches.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whopper.
It is. Yeah. And then the one, there was a lady in camp too. She killed one the same day I did. Hers was over 18 inches.
Yeah.
So all of them had is just the genetics up there produced the big heads. Is what's there. But anyway, younger bear came in. He fed around for about 10 minutes or so. Then he started looking. Passed the bait and just all of a sudden just ran off. So I knew there was another bear out there, and sure enough, I saw another one walking through the trees, a little bit bigger. He wasn't real big, and I probably wouldn't have shot him. But it was just he was just walking, just wasn't really interested in the bait. He was just kind of walking by, and then about an hour passed. I just happened to sitting there. I was really reading a book,
what book were you reading? Man?
I was reading a book by Don Thomas. Called
Wife. Oh, really?
Yeah, he's one of my favorite writers. Whitefish Can't Jump, fishing book.
So I'll be darned.
But so if you ever want a good read, any of Don, he's a traditional bow hunter too.
Yeah.
He's been, you know who he is?
Yeah.
Okay. So I got all his books and I reread them over and over and over again. Yeah.
I'll be darned.
So I just finished a chapter and was putting that book up, and it was probably, 6:30 at this point, and I just happened to...
What time's it getting dark?
About 9:30.
Okay.
9:30 is into shooting light. So it's still early, and I've seen a couple bears, and it was the last day, so it was a good sign. The weather was okay. It was cloudy, but you could see dark clouds around, so it was potentially going to rain. And then actually, and shortly after that, it did start to rain. It wasn't a hard rain. It rained for about 15, 20 minutes. It's just miserable to hunt in the rain. And honestly, I mean, I didn't bring the right equipment with me on this trip. I got cold. I didn't expect it to be. I mean, it was, I don't think it got above 50 the whole time I was there.
Wow.
And then it rained and snowed a couple times. So... that kind of makes for, you know, I just think, it deadens that bear activity a little bit. And also, you know, you just stick with it and eventually something will happen. But it makes it a little tougher hunt for sure mentally. But anyway, it rained for about 20 minutes or so. And then it kind of stopped and cleared up. And I just happened to look behind me and I saw a bear behind me about, 40 or 50 yards. And it was a good bear. It's one I would have shot for sure if he would have come in. It was definitely a boar, just the head you could see, but it was through the brush. It wasn't real clear, even though it was early season and there were no leaves on the trees. It's still brush, you have right. Screen, look through like a screen. And so he kind of just walks real slow back there. He stops a lot, then he turns and goes the other way, and I just lose him. I mean, I'm thinking, where did he go? For the next hour, I'm basically keep looking behind me. Of course, I'm videoing all this, and I never get him on camera because he's behind me and it's just an awkward position, and it's the last day and I don't want to screw it up with movement. If he's going to come in, I want him to come in. And but I just kind of lose him back there. I just kind of don't know if he walks straight away and I miss him or what, but if over the next probably 45 minutes or so, I just continually look behind me waiting on him to kind of appear.
Come
I figured
back.
He was bedded or something, but one of the times I'm looking and all of a sudden I turn back around and there's a bear at the bait. And it was the bear I ended up shooting. And he just come walking in to my left. I suspect it was the same bear. I don't know for sure.
Oh, really? You think it made a loop?
Could have made a loop way around me and just came, because I was kind of sitting on the edge of this. There were these sloughs. I was kind of on a little finger in between these two sloughs. And it was a deeper slough on my left and one on my right. And they were just kind of coming through there. Almost, it's kind of a natural... travel corridor, and he kind of came that way, and he just kind of appeared. And
that's one of the fun parts of a baited hunt that people don't understand unless you're there.
Yeah.
But if you spent that much time sitting in a tree stand,
right,
waiting, and just this huge animal just appears in front of you in bow range,
right,
silent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's its own version of like
right.
a big, huge buck. Standing out there
right.
making a scrape, and you see his movement.
And you would think you would see him. I mean, they're black, and when you do see him, they stand out.
Yeah.
But when they're back in that brush, they're hard to see.
Yeah.
Because they don't move fast. They're generally slow movers, and especially the older, mature bears. And he just came in extremely slow, and he just was just there and milled around the bait, and he just plops down, basically, and turns his back to me. And never really had a good shot. Anyway, when he came in originally, but I had, three different cameras set up just because I wanted to make sure we got this proof that he was there. And, we're filming something for Bear Horizons, and so I wanted to make sure, we had good footage. So I had a GoPro set up on the bait and then really two cameras around me. And my GoPro is one I activate with my phone. It's remote through the phone, and so I'm digging through my pockets trying to get the phone out so I can turn the camera on and activate it. And all of a sudden, I didn't think I made a noise, but apparently I did. So he turns his head and looks and gets up and just slowly walks away.
And
I'm thinking to myself,
no.
You've got to be
no.
kidding me. These stupid cameras.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, Clay,
why did he not film this?
I don't need to film this. But he walked away slow. He just kind of... so I was kind of hoping he would come back, and it turns out he did. He just walked maybe 20, 30 yards away, turned around, and stopped.
You thought it was over, though.
I'm thinking, nah, this is awful, but it's still early enough. It's 7:30.
Okay, so you got so 2 hours.
2 hours left. So okay. I'm thinking, okay, something's going to come in.
Yeah.
So if I blow this one, I'm still okay. But this was a good bear. I mean, judging bears is hard. And I was guessing this bear in the 250-pound range, which was, to me, a good bear about anywhere you go. But so he did kind of mosey back in really slow, took his time, went around the baits, and eventually the circled in, and it was like he just came broadside, then he really exposed his chest, I mean, just perfectly, and I just sent the arrow in and went right through him.
How far was it?
Probably about 16, 17 yards.
Okay.
So, and the arrow just smacked the other side of his shoulder, went through and buried into the other side of his shoulder, and he ran off. And I mean, blood popped out as soon as that arrow hit, and I thought, that's a dead bear.
Yeah.
And I thought, Clay's going to be happy.
Clay's going to be happy. And I was.
He definitely was.
We were, so Colby and I were in the backcountry, and I had just missed a bear with a rifle. When I got a text message, we had surprisingly good cell coverage where we were at.
Yeah.
I got a text message from Brian, and I could tell the bear was big because he looked big with you standing beside sitting beside it.
Sitting beside it.
I was like, that is a big bear.
And he was.
So he's a lot bigger than you thought he was.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, it was like any outfitter, they want you to, you know, wait for them. And so I actually just walked out because I wanted to get some daylight recovery, you know, footage as well. And so I walked out about a mile where I could get radio service because I was probably 2 miles back in. And so Todd came up with the ATV, and we just followed the – it was a sparse blood trail, which I was kind of surprised with the amount of blood when the arrow hit. It was a small cup full of blood that popped out of him. But like bears do, they just don't bleed real well.
Yeah.
But it was easy to follow the trail, and he just tore up the ground. He went about 80, 90 yards and just piled up. And, yeah, when I saw him – Todd was in front, and he just said, oh, and he just started hooting and hollering, oh, you know, it's a really big bear. And I didn't see it yet, but then when I walked up on him and just saw the mass of black that's laying on the ground and just how big it is, I realized, wow, this is a big bear. And then ended up being about a little over 350 pounds.
Did y'all actually weigh it?
Weighed it there.
Huh? Really? So yeah. I mean, what did it exactly weigh?
It was right a little over 300 pounds with the guts out.
So, okay, so you weighed it with guts out.
And so Todd said that, oh, that's probably about 50 pounds or so of guts.
Yeah, okay.
And so we're guessing around 350, but it was the head that was big.
Yeah.
You could tell immediately picking up the head, it was a 19-plus head, if not 20, and Todd immediately said, it's, you know, he judges heads. That's his what he really likes. You know, he don't care how long it is, how much it weighs, what it squares, how big's that head is what he wants to know.
Yeah.
And he immediately said, he picked it up, he said, oh, yeah, this is a 20-inch bear. And when we end up taking the skull out, it was 20 and a half.
And that's an incredible animal.
It is.
I mean, of the bears that I've killed, I've only killed one that dried over 20.
Right.
And that's an issue there is that the official score has to be done 60 days after the drying period, which starts after the skull is completely out of the hide.
Right.
And I've killed a couple that green scored over 20. Actually, two that green scored over 20 that shrunk to be under 20.
Right.
We're in the high 19s.
Right.
So just one of them made it over 20. So I say that to say that that's an incredible animal. And the Boone and Crockett awards minimum is 20 inches.
Right.
Boone and Crockett all time is 21. So there's two entry levels into every big game animal in Boone and Crockett. There's the awards. That's just what they call it. We can talk about that in another podcast. There's an awards minimum, and there's an all-time minimum.
Right.
And for bear, anywhere in the world, a 20-inch bear is a giant.
Yeah.
You can't – I mean, if you had $50,000, Brian, and said, I want to go to the best outfitter in the world and I have to kill a 20-inch bear – you couldn't do it.
Right.
I mean, there's nobody that can guarantee you that. My 550-pound bear in Oklahoma this year did not score 20 inches.
What did he score?
Well, he green scored 20 and 1/16. He's
right.
One of the ones that actually I've had I've had two that he was one of them.
Right.
And
he's going to end the higher 19.
Yeah, he's not even a 20-inch bear.
Right.
But anyway, I hijacked your story just to emphasize what kind of animal
that
is.
And I think that's just the genetics up there because even the other bears in camp had big heads on them. Yeah. And then that's just what's there. That's just what they grow. So it's like some, you know, Kansas has big whitetails, and, you know, well, the Duck Mountains of Manitoba have big bears.
So you were really excited?
I was.
What does Brian Strickland act like when he's excited?
He puts a little smirk on his face.
Just a small smirk.
Yeah, just a little small smirk.
Man, that's what I thought.
That's my cop instinct in me. So, you know.
Just, Brian's a former law enforcement agent.
So, but no, it's big. I mean, when you just reach down there and you kneel beside it and you just touch them and you realize they're just big. I mean, the paws are big. The head was big. His pelt was incredible. It was just perfect. And it was just a great bear. I mean, I couldn't have been pleased, and I did what Clay told me to do, was hold out. Don't kill a small bear.
You did it, man.
I did it.
I
follow instructions well.
Good
job, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, really, congratulations.
A beautiful bear.
And it's awesome that you did it with one of our outfitters. I mean, Bear Hunting Magazine, we are associated with some of the best black bear hunting outfitters in the world. We really are.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd is one of those. I consider him one of those. For
yeah,
real.
He is. He was a good guy. I mean, I got to spend a lot of time with him and the other two guys because I actually bunked with them. Because I just wanted to have that experience of seeing, you know, who they are. And top-notch guys. I mean, they're always thinking about, okay, how can we make this better? What can we do next time to make it better? I mean, really, one is, you know, knowing that I've been with, you know, quite a few outfitters. He asked me, you know, what do you think? You know, what would you change?
Yeah.
So he's really, I mean, he's relatively
new. He's
hungry. He's hungry.
He's pretty, Todd is like in his 30s somewhere.
Right. This is his third year. He's been a guide. Most of his, he's a timber guy. Does a lot of timber and surveying. And, but he's been guiding, you know, since he's been an adult.
Yeah.
So this is his, he's been doing the outfitting now for bears here in Manitoba for, I think this is his third season.
Yeah.
No, he does a really good job. He's conscientious, and which is kind of what you want.
Absolutely.
And an outfitter, someone that's going to take care of you and really wants you to be successful. So,
you know, I want to talk about, like, what makes a Northern Spring Bear Camp so unique and fun. Because some people could say, baited bear hunt, you know, there isn't a challenge in it, there isn't. Let me tell you, to go hunt a big game animal in the spring from someone who's conditioned to only hunt in the fall adds a whole other dimension to your hunting. It's an incredible experience in and of itself.
Right.
I mean, I've been hunting now spring bear seasons for about 6 years, mm-hmm. I guess. Before that, I'd never hunted in the spring.
Right.
And, I mean, it was like, and it still is, but to me, it's an incredible experience.
It is.
To load up your bow or your rifle in our case, and go out in late April on a big game hunt.
Right.
I mean, there's no other thing that you can do it with.
Right.
Yeah, we were talking to Joe Condell's Western Bear Foundation yesterday, and he gave me some insight that I never even thought about before. But he said, like with wild sheep, guys go nuts over wild sheep.
They
give all this money to wild sheep, and they'll probably never hunt one in their life.
Right.
And you know, the comparison, we all get it. Wild sheep are extraordinary animals and beautiful and rare, but we have black bear and all these different places, spring and fall seasons, and there's just this incredible opportunity.
There is.
And a lot of people really never utilize it.
Well, most of the opportunities are over the counter.
Over the counter.
I mean, and it's just a matter of you loading your truck up, pointing at someplace and going.
Yes. And what we're trying to do, Brian, and you know this, but, I mean, we are trying to elevate the status of black bear hunting and what we believe and know is conservation in North America. I mean, we're the guys that are coming in and saying, hey, it's cool to be a bear hunter.
Right.
And if you're a bear hunter, it doesn't mean that you're not everything else you always were before.
Right.
But to bear hunt is cool. Bears are the icon of North American wilderness. It's an incredible animal, incredible meat, incredible hide, incredible fur, incredible teeth and fang and claw.
It is fat.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'd rather hunt bears over spring turkeys any day.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with turkeys.
You can't trust a spring turkey, and you're talking to a southerner who loves spring turkey hunting.
Yeah.
But you can't trust them.
Yeah.
You'll go out and not hear a gobble.
Right.
And just go on a pretty little nature hike.
Well, what's nice, too, about this bear camp and other ones I've been to is that you just have a plethora of hunters in camp, some that have never seen a bear, some that have hunted bears a couple times, or some that have hunted bears for 30 years. And so you're experiencing things with other people for the first time, as well as hearing stories from guys that have been doing it for so long. One of the guys in camp was his name was Paul Klausman. He's killed 27 bears in his life.
I'll be darned.
I mean, he is a bear man. There's no question. He loves to hunt bears.
Yeah.
And he's killed grizzlies and blacks and browns and. Mm. And, you know, just hearing his stories, and he's actually killed a 21-inch bear up there last year.
Really?
Wow. And with Todd. So, I mean, he's killed big bears, so that's why he comes back there. I think the bear he killed was 19 this year. So.
Wow.
So, yeah, you're meeting, you know, you're with people that at all phases of the bear hunting world. And some guys may only hunt bears one time in their life, but then some guys just kind of get addicted to it. They just love it over and over and over again. So, you know, I'm kind of those ones. I think there's three kinds of bear hunters, too. I think there's ones that just want to try it, one and done, check the box off, and they'll never do it again. And there's guys that'll do it if they have time to do it in the springtime. But then there's the guys that are just completely dedicated to it that will be.
You got to hunt every spring.
That will hunt every spring, won't miss a spring, and will hunt two or three places in the spring if they can.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, man, it sounds like an incredible week. I like this early season bear hunting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, typically, like classic,
I do too now.
Classic spring bear hunt is the 20s of May through the 1st of June. But, you know, this early spring bear hunt is really good. And, man, that's awesome. Well, congratulations.
No, thank you. It was a fun hunt, and we had a good time.
Yeah.
So it was a good camp. And so I'm looking forward to swinging up there again sometime.
Yeah. Well, we've got our mules out here in the trailer.
Yep.
We've got to head east.
Yeah, we're driving all the way back to Arkansas tonight. But thanks for meeting us over here, Brian.
You bet. Thank you.
Pleasure. And any closing comments for either one of you?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to hear something from Bear Tech.
Bear Tech?
No. I mean,
hunting the West isn't easy.
Yep.
No, it's not.
Yep.
So.
Well, all right, Brian. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Hey, why don't you close... Give us do you know the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast tagline?
Keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.
That's right
it.
On.
Bam.
Dang. You can tell I'm a columnist on it.
That's right. That's it. I don't even need to say it.
You put me on the spot.
It's done.
My respect just went up even more.
Yeah.